Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Secret Slave, Kidnapped and Abused for 13 Years. This is my story of survival. By Anna Rustin, with Jackie Buttress. Narrated by Faye Dell. This book is a work of non-fiction, based on the life experiences and recollections of Anna Rustin, who is using a pseudonym. Certain details in this story, including names, places, and dates, have been changed to protect identity and privacy. Chapter 1. The Cleansing.
Would you like to come and meet my family? My mother likes having visitors. She would love to meet a nice English girl like you.
Malik's friendly smile gave me a warm feeling. He was a stocky man, overweight, not good-looking, and about twice my age, but he seemed kind, and I wasn't doing anything special. Well, I hesitated, looking across the taxi office towards Val to see what she thought. But she was deep into a prickly phone conversation with someone, so I couldn't interrupt.
It's time for my break. I can drive you there now to say hello. We needn't be away long.
He stood up.
Come on, just a cup of tea with my mum.
Okay, I nodded. It was a bit claustrophobic in the taxi base, and smelt of the kebabs the drivers had been eating that evening, so I could do with some fresh air. I'd probably be back before Val even noticed. Malik ushered me to his taxi and opened the front passenger door for me. Where does your mum live? I asked, in a moment of uncertainty. I didn't want to be away too long.
Not far, just a few streets away.
As we drove along, I looked out at all the lights in the windows of houses that we passed. Why did other people's houses always look so warm and inviting, like my great-grandma's used to be? I'd always been happy living there with her, until she died when I was 10. I had never even slept in a bed on my own until the night after she died. Now I didn't really have a home. Rejected by my mother and abused by my violent father, I was a naive, unloved runaway, staying on Val's sofa. She was kind to me, but nobody really cared or loved me, like my great-grandma used to.
How was school today? Malik asked, as we turned onto the ring road.
All right, I shrugged.
What lessons did you have?
Lots of lessons, mostly boring ones, I sighed. Art was good.
Is art your favorite subject?
Not usually, but it was good today.
So, what subject do you like best?
I wasn't used to being asked about my day. Having just turned 15, I was a typical teenager, so I wasn't into conversations about school lessons. But Malik seemed to take a genuine interest in me. His smile warmed me at a time when I craved affection. That made me feel good. I like gym, I said, and dance. He glanced at me with a grin.
I can see you have a good body for dancing, he said. In Pakistan, we love dancing. The women do some beautiful dances. Maybe my sister could teach you to dance the Sami.
Maybe, I nodded. Are we nearly there?
Yes, he answered, turning into a side street. Only 2 more minutes.
Sure enough, 2 minutes later he pulled into the driveway of a large semi-detached house.
Here we are.
It's a big house. I could see the dark outline against the starry sky.
Yes, it's 2 houses made into one.
Do you live here too?
Yes, nearly all my family lives here. My mum, some of my brothers, their wives and children, and my sister and her family too.
Wow. I couldn't see much detail in the darkness, but there were lights on in most of the windows. It looked a welcoming house.
Come on.
He led me to the front door.
Take your shoes off.
Why?
Because we always take our shoes off when we go inside the house.
What for?
To keep it clean, and because that's our way.
He smiled as he unlaced his shoes.
Come and meet the family.
I took my shoes off, left them next to his in the porch, and stepped into the hallway. He put on some flip-flop sandals, but there was nothing for me, so I walked barefoot. He took me into a large living room with 3 long settees arranged as 3 sides of a square. On the 4th wall, there was a gas fire and a hole built through the wall,
with a badly fitting door that seemed to lead into the adjoining house behind the fireplace. There were a lot of people watching a tiny TV in the corner, showing a Pakistani film.
Come and sit down, he said, leading me to a settee.
Several of the women got up to make space and went to the kitchen, but an old lady sat still and gave me a half smile.
This is my mother, Farhat Aziz.
He pointed to me and said,
Anna.
Hello, I said, sitting down next to Malik. Next, he turned to the men in the room.
And these are my brothers.
They all smiled and looked pleased to see me. A sad-eyed young woman, about 10 years older than me, came in with a tray.
This is Muniza. She is my brother Khalid's first wife.
I gave her a smile and she passed me a cup of milky tea.
Get some chapatis,
Malik ordered her with a stern expression. I hadn't seen this side of him before. I had a moment's hesitation. Maybe I shouldn't have come. But then Malik flashed a smile at me, and I felt fine again.
I expect you're hungry, he asked.
Yes, I nodded. Muniza came back with a large plate of buttered chapatis. They looked a bit different to the one I ate when Val and I had a takeaway a few days before.
They're homemade, Malik explained, as if reading my thoughts.
Yes, it's very good, I agreed. Just then, Muniza brought a bowl of minced meat with a strange scent and put it down on the table in front of me, along with a bowl of oranges cut into quarters. They all looked at me, so I took a spoonful of meat to taste. It stung my tongue, but I tried not to pull a face.
Do you like it? Asked Malik. It's lamb with Punjabi spices.
I nodded my head. Not bad. Malik and his brothers all laughed. I hadn't realized how hungry I was, so I helped myself to another chapati, partly to take the taste of the spices away, and sucked an orange quarter, which tasted quite bitter to me, but I wasn't really a fruit eater. After I'd eaten, his mother tried to talk to me, but I couldn't understand anything she said. Her smile vanished, and a look of contempt took its place. The brothers were talking amongst themselves, so I ate a third chapati and fidgeted as the time passed. I need to go to the toilet, I whispered to Malik.
Muniza, he called,
then some strange words I didn't understand.
We speak Punjabi here, he explained. Muniza will show you to the bathroom.
When I came out, Muniza and another woman were waiting with a mop, some bleach and other cleaning things. They went straight in and scrubbed everything. To me, this seemed rather a strange thing to do, but I had realized by now that this was a strange family. Well, strange to me, anyway. Can we go now? I asked when I came back into the living room.
Soon.
Malik nodded and carried on talking to his brothers in their language. I sat down next to him and listened, but it was just a jumble of sounds. I didn't know what they were saying, but they kept looking at me and smiling. They could have been talking about me, but I couldn't tell. So I just sat there and looked up at the images of women in long, wafty clothes on the silent TV screen, then at the wooden elephant clock ticking slowly on the mantelpiece. I kept staring at that clock, thinking he'd better take me home in a minute. Finally, Malik seemed to notice.
What's wrong with you?
It's getting late. I'd like to go now.
Not yet, he insisted,
then carried on talking with his brother, Isharat. Please, will you take me home? I pleaded a few minutes later. Don't you have to get back to work? Malik turned and put his arm lightly around my shoulders, his dark eyes sparkling. He hadn't done anything like that before, so it felt a bit odd, but it was like he was showing me affection, and I wasn't used to that. I was confused, but glad he liked me. Perhaps he wanted me to be his girlfriend.
No, you stay here, he insisted. Stay the night with us. It's late and you look tired. I'm sure you will sleep well here. I have to go back to work now, but I will take you straight home in the morning.
Well, I hesitated. All right. He got up, checked everything was locked, and went out through the front door. I was left alone, feeling nervous, in a room full of strangers. What's going on here? I wondered. What do I do now? The old lady started talking to me again, but I couldn't understand a word she said, so I just smiled at her.
At that moment, two children came running through the room. They stopped when they saw me and pointed, shouting, "Gori, Gori!" Nobody told them off. That's when I started to feel uneasy. Before long, taking no notice of me, the family went off in different directions, putting the lights out. "What about me?" I asked one of the women. I found out later. She was Malik's sister, Bushra. She gave me a kind look and led me up the stairs to an open doorway. "You asleep," she said in her broken English, pointing into the room. I was quite tired, now that I had eaten, and the milky tea made me feel very sleepy. Looking back, I don't know why I agreed to stay, but I thought Val wouldn't mind. It would only be for one night. She would assume I'd gone to stay with a school friend, which I sometimes did, or maybe back to my dad's. She hated him, so she wouldn't check. Nobody would miss me. I looked around me. It was a big room, facing the stairs, with a bed against one wall, already made up. It would be fine for tonight. Malik would come back in the morning and take me home. But where was home? Where should I go? Should I go back to my dad's house and put up with his physical and possibly sexual abuse, as he had threatened? No, that was why I'd run away. I couldn't go back there. Or should I go to my mother? I hadn't seen her for a couple of years, which was a good thing. She always told me how much she hated me and showed it in every way she could, not to mention all her boyfriends. Val had been very kind to let me stay on her sofa since I ran away from Dad's, but I knew I was in the way there. I would have to think of something, somewhere to go on a Saturday morning. I had only a small purse with me. Inside were a few copper coins and Val's door key. I should have had my dad's key as well, but I'd thrown it into a hedge when I ran away. I never wanted to use that key again. The only other things I had in my purse were my school bus pass for ID and a small photo of Jamie, the boy I'd been out with a few times before he joined the army. I liked him a lot, but he was being posted abroad. The only person alive who really cared about me, I would miss him. I was supposed to go with his parents to see him off at the station the day before, but I didn't. I don't know why. Maybe it seemed a bit serious, meeting his parents. But I wish I'd gone. Jamie would have been so pleased. Maybe I could get Malik to take me to Jamie's parents' house. Although I hadn't met them, Jamie must have told them about me. Perhaps they would take me in. I yawned. I could decide where to go in the morning. I had no toothbrush or anything. Never mind, I thought. I was so tired it wouldn't matter for one night. The big double bed with its old-fashioned eiderdown looked very inviting, so I just undressed down to my underwear, put out the light, slipped under the sheet and drifted off to sleep. I had no idea when I woke, no watch or clock, but the light was shining in round the edges of the curtains and I heard sounds downstairs, so I got up and dressed. Malik was back from work and came up the stairs to collect me. Good, I thought. Now at last he will drive me away from here. He took me down to the living room to sit on one of the settees. I could hear the women preparing food through the archway in the kitchen. Okay, I thought. I'm going to have breakfast before we leave. They gave me a cup of tea, but I didn't like what they called tea. Sickly sweet. It was made of boiled milk with a lot of sugar in it. I knew I'd have to drink it, or they might think me rude. I gulped it down quickly to make sure the taste wouldn't linger, but it did. I turned to Malik and gave him a smile, hoping we could get going at last. But he ignored me. "Can you take me home now, please?" I asked. That was when it started. His whole face clouded over with anger. "You're not going home," he spat out, sitting up and confronting me. "You're not going anywhere. You're mine now." I was only a few days past my 15th birthday. What does he mean? I wondered. "I'm not going home. What can I do now?" "You're mine," he repeated, grabbing my arm and pulling me up. "Ow, you're hurting me." Why was he being so rough? "I'll show you where you're going." He dragged me to the stairs, pushed me up the first few, then took hold of my long blonde hair and dragged me up the rest. "That's the only place you're going." He gave me one last shove, back into the bedroom where I floundered on all fours. "Don't say a word,"
he ordered me. Don't look out of that window. He pointed to the front window, overlooking the street, its curtains still closed. Don't go near it. I will know if you've even touched the curtains. Just sit on that bed and don't move.
He turned and left, slamming the door behind him and turned the key in the lock. I couldn't believe it. What had happened to me? Why? All I'd said was I wanted to go home, even though I didn't know where home was. Already I'd stayed too long at Val's, and now I couldn't remember Jamie's parents' address, so I couldn't go there either. Well, it would have to be my mother's. But now what would I do? What could I do? Malik had been so angry with me, so forceful, that I didn't dare disobey him. Maybe, if I did as he said, he would change his mind and let me leave when he got back. I sat on the edge of the bed, in this barren room, sobbing silent tears. But I couldn't shake his menacing image out of my mind. His black eyes glazed with evil, clenched face and lips, stretched taut as he ground his teeth. There I sat, cold to the bone and shivering with fear. How long did I sit like that? Long enough to cry myself dry. Several hours, I'm sure. Why hadn't I worn a watch that day? But if I had, it wouldn't have accelerated the slow, heavy pace of time. I willed him to return if he was going to take me home, but I didn't want him to come and threaten me. The longer I sat there, the greater my apprehension. There was nothing to look at in the room. The curtains were drawn almost closed, and I didn't dare open them after what he had said. There was no TV, no pictures on the walls, no books or magazines, nothing to take my mind off my fears. I sat still, on the edge of the bed, and watched the door. Perhaps someone, one of the women maybe, would come and unlock it, let me out, wave me goodbye. But nobody came. I had no food, nothing to drink. I couldn't even go to the toilet. I panicked. Suppose nobody came. I might starve to death. Had they forgotten me? Unable to sit still any longer, I started banging on the door. Lightly at first, then harder and louder, shouting and yelling, "Let me out! I need the toilet!" Still nobody came. The only response was the sound of angry voices from downstairs. The women were shouting foreign words at me. I couldn't understand any of it, but it sounded like swear words. Sitting back on the bed, I felt drained, powerless. I was a prisoner without even the most basic facilities. Unable to hold it in any longer, I squatted in the far corner opposite the old-fashioned wardrobe and peed on the floorboards. I felt so ashamed, but I couldn't help it. I think it must have been late afternoon when Malik finally came home. With every loud footstep, I flinched. Would he still be angry? I heard the key turn and he flung the door open, quickly closing and locking it again.
"My back hurts,"
he complained, putting something down on the floor and taking his shirt off.
"Massage it for me."
He lay down on his front, across the bed. For a moment, I hesitated.
"Come on," he urged. "Massage my back."
Too frightened to refuse, I didn't have the first idea how to do massage, except what I'd once seen in an American film, where the woman rubbed the man's shoulders and each side of the neck. I tried that on him, revulsed by his fat body and sweaty vest.
"No, you stupid bitch. I said my back."
Trembling, I moved my hands down his back to his waist.
"Yes, there," he ordered, lifting his vest for me.
I had to do what he said. I was too afraid not to. I did some rubbing movements outwards from the middle of his back, then upwards and downwards, making sure I stayed above his low-slung trousers. Suddenly, he turned over and almost sent me flying. I shall never forget what came next. As he got off the bed, he picked something up from the floor and stood over me. At first, my gaze was fixed on the demonic leer that contorted his face. Then I noticed it, the stiff bottle brush he triumphantly held up as he watched the horror flooding my face.
"You're a dirty fucking bitch," he snarled. "You're a filthy white slut, and I'm going to clean you, so you can be mine."
A sadistic smile crossed his face. What did he mean? How was I dirty?
Why the bottle brush?
How many fucking filthy Englishmen have you been with?
I haven't,
I pleaded. Don't lie to me. All English girls are slags, white slags. I need to cleanse you.
With a wide grin of excitement, he pushed me down on the bed, tore down my pants and pulled my legs apart. I was filled with terror as he forced the rough, bristled brush inside me, tearing my skin to shreds as he pushed it in and out, up and down, round and round. At this, I screamed out in agony. I couldn't help it. The pain was excruciating.
Shut the fuck up, he yelled.
Stop, please, stop.
You're enjoying this, aren't you? He jeered, relishing my pain. This is an Englishman inside you.
But I couldn't speak. I couldn't think. Terrified of the damage he had caused me, I feared every slightest new movement of the brush. With one sudden jerk, he tore the brush right out of me. I almost fainted from pain.
You're mine now, he snarled. You'll do what I say.
I was in cold shock.
Won't you?
He shouted, holding the brush near me again, while his eyes lit up at the sight of my fresh, red blood running out.
Yes,
I sobbed, barely able to hear my own voice. It seemed to please him.
Turn over, white bitch,
he ordered me and stood back to watch my discomfort. He gave me a push, so I lay flat on my tummy, hardly daring to peer over my shoulder in fear. With a sigh of satisfaction, he pointed the sharp, plastic handle of the brush towards my backside.
No, I shrieked in desperation. Please, don't!
But it was too late. As he forced the handle in and out, the searing pain cut through me. The more noise I made, the more frenzied he became. His heavy hand over my mouth and nose, pulling my head back and stifling my screams, almost choking me. I struggled desperately to breathe. Within minutes, he had split my anus and there was blood everywhere. Now at last he was satisfied, it seemed. He calmly put on his shirt, picked up the brush and walked out of the room, locking the door behind him. I didn't want to stay on that bed, so I pulled the bloodied eiderdown around me and crawled over to the corner next to the wardrobe, leaving a dark red trail. Shamed and degraded, curled up on the floor like an injured fawn, sobbing. Why did I agree to come here? What had I done to deserve this? Chapter 2. Punishment. I don't know how long I sat, with the bed cover wrapped around me, rocking painfully on the bare floorboards in the corner of the room. My past hadn't all been happy, but nothing had prepared me for the horrors in this house. I wanted to stop myself rocking, but I couldn't. After a while, when it was beginning to get dark, I heard footsteps coming up the stairs and flinched, rigid with fear. I heard the key turn in the lock and watched as the door was pushed slowly open. I held my breath, then let out a deep sigh of relief as one of the women came in, carrying a mug of something. She was a big woman, years older than me. Later, I found out this was Sureya, the wife of Malik's brother, Isharat. I wondered whether she had heard my screams, whether she knew or guessed, but I couldn't tell anything from her stern expression. She plonked the mug down on the chest of drawers near the bed, then without even a glance in my direction, turned towards the door and walked out, locking it behind her. I listened to her footsteps fading away, then the door at the bottom of the stairs being closed and locked as well. She must have been told to make sure I couldn't get out. Was this it? Was I now a prisoner? I could see the mug was steaming, so I assumed it was tea. I'd had nothing to eat or drink since the previous night. I wasn't hungry at all, with a shock, I suppose, but my mouth and throat were parched from all the crying. Leaning into the corner, I pulled myself up one painful step after another. My whole body cried out for a drink of some kind, but when I looked into the mug, I felt sick. It wasn't tea or even water, just a murky fluid with bits floating in it. I couldn't even guess what it was, and I didn't want to drink it. I couldn't. I just dipped the tip of one finger in and used it to wet my lips. Afterwards, I sat on the edge of the bed in a sort of trance, For a time I no longer felt the pain. I was numb, disoriented. I don't know what I was thinking. I can only remember sitting there, silently weeping. I didn't dare make a sound in case someone heard me and came. I didn't want to see anybody. For a long time I sat there desperately lonely, craving attention, yet knowing this was impossible, and above all, I was petrified of Malik's return. I hadn't been to the toilet since the day before, and I didn't know what to do, so I went over and banged on the door. The only response was angry women's voices, shouting at me again in a language I didn't understand. It sounded as if they were swearing at me to stop the noise. But at last, something came of it. A few minutes later, Sureya came back again, this time with a glass of water which she put down on the chest of drawers, and a wide, low, empty barrel with a lid on it. Written across the front was the word ghee. She carried it across the room and put it down on the floor away from the bed. Without saying a word, she went back out again and locked the door behind her. At first, I didn't realize what it was, but when I'd gulped down the water, it wasn't long before I needed a wee. That's when I guessed and used it, because I couldn't wait any longer. The next problem was when I wanted to poo. I couldn't do it in the barrel, that would be too shameful, and it would smell so bad. There was a large wooden chest of drawers by the bed, so I looked in there to see if I could find anything, but it was mostly full of linen and men's clothes. Next, I opened the doors to the old-fashioned wardrobe and rooted around the pile of stuff on the floor. That's where I found a zipped white handbag. It didn't look like it had ever been used, so I opened it up and used it to poo in, then zipped it closed again and replaced it in the wardrobe. It was the evening when Malik came back. I heard his deep voice booming down below, and moments later his heavy footsteps, trudging up the stairs, deliberate with intent. He unlocked the door and stormed in, slamming and locking it behind him. There I sat, rigid with fear, still on the edge of the bed. I hadn't turned the light on, so his great bulk loomed against the shadows. He was grinding his teeth, as if he'd riled himself up. The light from the street lamp outside filtered through the curtains and illuminated the rage in his face, the evil in his black eyes. Lunging towards me, he grabbed my hair in one fist to lift me up. He rammed me up against the wall, holding my head against the cold, hard plaster with his other hand.
"You ever tell anybody about this?" he snarled. "You ever look out of that window, and your head's going to go through this wall."
That's when he grabbed my hair even more tightly, pulled my head a few inches away, and smashed it against the wall. He let go and I folded, dazed, to the floor, feeling as if my head would explode. As he strode back towards the door to put the light on, I gazed up at the wall, where I could see the blood trickling down. When I put my hand to my scalp, I felt the wetness of blood oozing through my hair. He smirked with satisfaction as he saw the blood.
"You're my property now, and you'll do as I say," he told me.
Then he paused.
"Whatever I say, you do. Or else you know what the consequences will be, don't you?"
I gave a slight nod.
"Don't you?" he demanded loudly, pulling my head up by my hair again and putting his face right in front of mine.
"Yes," I replied shakily, stifling a sob.
"Good. You'd better believe it."
"Would you kill me?" I dared to ask.
"Well, you just try me," he replied, letting go of my hair as he pushed my head down.
That's when I knew. I'm in real trouble now, I thought. Serious trouble. Realization of the danger I was in set me off into uncontrollable weeping. I just couldn't stop. He watched me for several seconds. Then, whenever a sob came out, I got a smack in the face from the back of his hand.
"Shut up your bleating," he demanded. "You're a weak white slag with nothing to cry about. Nobody wants you. Nobody misses you. You're lucky I've taken you in, and now I'm looking after you, so I don't want any of your white trash emotion."
Nodding, I did my best to stifle my tears.
"All you have to do is whatever I say, and you'll be all right."
He pulled me roughly from the floor to sit back on the edge of the bed.
"Now do it,"
he demanded, undoing his trousers.
"Do what?"
I asked.
I had no idea what he meant. Do what all you white slags do.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?